Two of the most well-respected names in audiobooks have come together to write a book on the subject. Storyteller: How to Be an Audiobook Narrator is co-authored by Audible Hall of Fame narrator Lorelei King and award-winning producer Ali Muirden. It offers simple, straightforward advice for those who want to get started as narrators, as well as giving tips and techniques for those already working in the audiobook business. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by both Lorelei and Ali. Welcome to you both. Lorelei, I was looking down through the list of books that you've recorded over the years, and it's a phenomenal number. It's over 200, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I've recorded well over 200 books. I don't know about for the RNIB, but just in life, that's for sure.
What led you to become an audiobook narrator in the first place?
It was kind of like most things in my life, a happy accident, really. I was in the right place with the right accent. There was a guy I knew, and he had to do a book of American short stories. They were, I think, horror stories or mystery. And he wanted me to do it. He booked all this time, and it turned out I kind of had a knack for it. I was really quick. And we finished at lunchtime when he'd expected to be working the whole day. So he took me out for a really expensive lunch. And I thought, oh, this is a good job. and then it kind of went from there. But I didn't really get started in until I started reading for the RNIB. And I have to really credit them with getting me on the road to doing audiobooks on a more regular basis.
And do you remember the first book that you recorded for the Talking Book Studios?
Hey, that's a really good question. No. They all blend into one. I'm afraid I don't. But it was in the old days when it was reel-to-reel tape that they'd record on, and it was quite a different process from how it is now that everything's digital. But I don't remember the actual book. I do remember one book, Gin and Daggers, a Jessica Fletcher mystery. I hope it never sees the light of day. But that was an early one that I did.
And Ali, what led you to become an audiobook producer?
That's a bit of a similar thing with a kind of happy accident in that I worked for Macmillan, the publisher, for over 27 years. And the last probably 12 to 13 years of that, I was running their audiobook division. And that was quite stressful and it was, you know, very busy. And I quickly cottoned on that actually the fun part was in the studio. So I used to sit in on all of our recordings. Mostly for a genuine reason, which was to make sure that, you know, they were going to plan, etc. But also because it was the fun bit. And why miss out on the fun bit if you've got to do all the horrible bit, you know, the meetings and the admin and the paperwork. So when I started up Creative Content with Lorelei, I thought that was what I'd be doing. I would just be running the business from our home offices. And I then started to get lots of requests from people who I knew in the industry to produce for them, because I'd picked up lots of tips watching all the different producers that we'd used over the 12 years and really learnt lots of the sort of tricks of the trade really from them. And it kind of snowballed from there really. So now I'm really busy. Most of the time I'm doing a project and I really enjoy it. I feel like I finally found my place in life. I love doing it and I don't ever get bored and I don't get cross and I don't get impatient with people. I just absolutely love doing it.
And it's true to say that the audiobook industry has never been as busy. What do you think has led to this explosion in the production of audiobooks?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, it has to be the advent of the download, which has made the huge difference. And you have to give full credit to Audible and Amazon for the work that they've put into promoting the audiobook as a format. When I took on doing audio at Macmillan, it was always treated a bit like, you know, you're patted on the head, the little kind of cottage industry within the main, you know, stream of publishing. And, you know, run along now, don't bother us with your funny little audio books. We've got better important things to do. But nowadays, it's really calling the shots, and the audio rights are as important to most publishers as any of the other rights that they would buy from an agent. So, and it is largely down to that download phenomenon, being able to make it so much easier for people to access audio and to have no problems carrying them around with them in a tiny iPod or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with Ali. I think also it fits into our lifestyles these days. People are just kind of discovering it and discovering that they can actually read by listening to books while they're doing other things that don't require their full attention. I think it's people becoming aware of it. And as Ali said, more availability, and that brought the price down as well, digital.
Lorelei, you've got one of the most well-respected and best-known voices in audiobooks.
Oh, you!
It is true to say that some of the narrations that I've listened to over the last 30 years have not been so good. Was that not yours, I hasten to add. Was that the spur behind you wanting to share some of your secrets as to how to be a successful audiobook narrator?
Do you know what? Maybe. It was a number of things. I've been thinking about it for a long time. Ali and I have talked about it for a long time. But this year I was inducted into the Audible Narrator Hall of Fame, which I figure is when they're about to put you on the ice floe and push you out into the Atlantic.
Set you alive.
So I thought, okay, I'm going out to pasture. I may as well pass on what I know. But part of it, well, I'm joking, sort of. But I am at that stage of my career now where I do want to share. And I think you're right. Digital, which Ali has mentioned, has meant that a lot more people are able to record, and they have no guidance as to what could make them better narrators or people coming at it cold. It's also the question I get asked more than any other when people get in touch. How can I do what you do? How do I become a narrator? Or even people who like audio, they just want to know, how does it work? How do you do that? And the time just seemed right for us. We had a gap in our publishing schedule for creative content, and we thought, let's do it.
And from a narrator's point of view, what are some of the do's and don'ts?
Oh, my goodness. There are a lot of them. I think one of my main things that I'm constantly surprised by is how fast people read. They don't realize they're trying to match their eye speed, I think. And you have to read much more slowly than you think. That's one thing. The second thing is to be very aware of extraneous noises. People aren't aware that if they smack their lips like that or take a breath or move off mic when they're talking, all those little things. It's about attention to detail and being conscious of every detail while not letting it sound like you're thinking of everything going on around.
And Ali, from a producer's point of view?
My biggest bugbear is people who don't prepare properly, who you know, and it doesn't happen that often, but you do sometimes get some people who are new to it and who come in and they kind of, you know, sort of say, hey, so what are we doing today? And it's kind of that kind of, your heart sinks into your boots and you think, oh God, this is not going to be a good day. The preparation is the key. You know, you really have got to prepare it like you would for, you know, I say you wouldn't show up on the first day of rehearsal for a play or to record a TV or film and not know your lines. So why would you show up and not having read the book, not having any idea what you're going to do with your characters and all that kind of thing, really? It's just, yeah, it's my biggest bugbear.
One of the things I like most about your readings, Lorelei, is the fact that you create very different voices for women who are different ages or men who are actually sometimes, I think, different weights. You do heavyweight men very well and lighter weight men. And I genuinely feel like I'm listening to an entire cast of characters. How do you get those voices from the same mouth?
Well, thank you, first of all. And I do love doing big cast books, because it is really fun to create voices. In the book, I go into some detail, too much to go into here, about a technique I call layering, which is about how you build voices. Sometimes they'll occur to you spontaneously. Sometimes there'll be clues in the text. But sometimes you have to build them. And it's really just being, I think, familiar with your voice. You need a certain amount of flexibility and to know what your voice can do so that you can create voices out of that. But thank you. That's a big compliment. I just
have to add that when Laurel and I recorded that section in the book, myself and our sound engineer, who know her so well, we were just stunned at how awesome it was. We were just like, our jaws were on the floor. We were just, she flew through it. There wasn't one mistake through the whole section, and she moves with such grace and ease through all these different voices into these different characters. It was just incredible. It's worth the price of the book. Just listen to that bit on its own. I really would recommend it.
Okay, Els, I'm paying for lunch. Thank you.
Now, Ali, you too were narrating some of Storyteller. Was that your first time on that side of the mic?
It's not my first time on that side of the mic in terms of recording interviews or having a little bit of recording experience. Sometimes I'm an extra in some of our audio publications. But it was the first time to do it our own, one of our own books, definitely. And it was quite intimidating, I must admit. I did practice a lot beforehand because, like Lorelei says, you've got to sound very natural and like you're just kind of coming out with these things off the top of your head and reading it at the same time, which is very difficult to do. So it took me, yeah, a good couple of days of practicing, and it was quite interesting to be poacher turned gamekeeper for a change and to be on the other side of the mic, and also to sort of have someone else telling me, oh no, do that again because you did that wrong, and so maybe I've got a bit more sympathy now for the poor actors I'm producing most of the time.
One of the chapters in the book is how to deal with sex scenes, which, if done properly, are very effective for those of us who listen to them, but if done badly, are absolutely hilarious. How do you overcome the embarrassment, Lorelei, at some of the sex scenes that you have to read?
You just, as I say in the book, you just have to create a closed set in your mind. I think being an actor, if you're a narrator who is an actor, not all narrators are, you're kind of used to that. You just have to shut everything out and imagine you're alone, because nothing is worse than being self-conscious when you're doing a sex scene or sending it up. And I think you have to make it real. And even if you think it's too really dirty or you think it's corny or whatever, you can't let that show, because to those characters involved in that scene, it's absolutely real and you have to convey that. And I know some of the embarrassment is you're embarrassed because you're reading in front of people like your producer and your engineer. But Ali has some thoughts on that, I'm sure.
We actually don't. I don't get embarrassed anymore. I just kind of, we glide over certain words with the kind of, oh, can I hear the T in that word? And, you know, and the P in that word. No, I must admit, we've done some really quite raunchy books. And in particular, a book I did with the lovely Amelia Fox. And Amelia's got this gorgeous, like, English rose and beautiful, lovely sort of, you know, the nicest, kindest face. She's just lovely. And then to hear her reading some of this raunchy sex was so weird. It was just like, oh let's have a cup of tea now, shall we? It's just very odd. But no, she did it brilliantly. And she, like, it's like, as Lorelei says, she just was utterly sincere in the way she did it. And so she got through it. But it, yeah, it's quite funny sometimes, some of the words that you kind of find yourself going, oh, right.
In the old days, when I was recording at the RNIB, I do remember when I was first, because some of the stuff I was quite racy, and the young, usually engineer would have to tell you where to drop in from. As I said, it used to be reel to reel, and it was poor things. I felt so sorry because they'd have to go, could you come in after his throbbing member? And thank you. I felt more for them than I did for myself, more embarrassed.
Which brings us smoothly on to which are the particularly memorable books that you've narrated over the years? Are there any really stick in the mind?
There are. I love the series I do. I think Janet Ivanovich, her Stephanie Plum series, really put me on the map as a narrator, and I'll always be grateful to her. I've just done book 25 of that series, and so that has a special place in my heart. There is a book that I did called The Cabinet of Wonders. I don't know if it ever did anything. It was a magical kind of fairy tale for adults. And that really does stick in my mind. And I don't know why, because it was beautiful and enchanting and not like anything I'd ever read before.
And Ali?
Well, it's difficult for me because I do work on so many different types of books. I suppose the ones I love producing, I love producing children's books. They're always good fun and they're hard to do. People always think, oh, well, picture book will be easy. But actually, you've got to make every word count on the page. But I also love doing a lot of the multi-voice productions that I've done. And in particular, the Graveyard book, which we won several awards for, including Best Production in the Audies. That was an amazing project to work on as well. But I've got loads of great authors that I've worked for. I've produced lots of authors reading their own books, and they're always amazing because, you know, they so want to get it right and they're great to work with. So they're always ones I treasure as well, yeah.
And is there a book that you would kill for to become the narrator of, Lorelei?
Yes. Geek Love by Catherine Dunn. Sadly, a version already exists. I've listened to parts of it. It's very good. But it's... and I would also like to do, when I was a child, the series I loved growing up was the Oz books, not just The Wizard of Oz, Patchwork Girl of Oz. It's a whole series. Some people don't realize that. And One day, maybe I will. Maybe I will record that. Maybe for us. Who knows? Might be public domain now. But I would say those two books.
And Ali?
Oh, that's a hard one. I mean, I would have killed to have been able to produce lots of the audios of the Georgette Heyer books, because I love those. They're still books I go back to. They're the kind of books I describe as a duvet book. When you're not well and you just need something comforting and lovely to read. And Eve Ribertson I loved as well. There are so many good books out there. It's so difficult to choose.
And how do you future-proof an audiobook? How do we know that you will be the voice of Janet Aronovich in 100 years' time?
In 100 years' time? I suppose the short answer is, well, we don't know. I mean, you can't future-proof that. An author can always change a narrator mid-series if they want to. In terms of how do I know I'll be able to keep working? I think you just have to keep improving your craft. And as long as you can turn in something that's going to save your client money by being fluent, efficient, not taking too much studio or editing time, that's the best thing you can do to future-proof yourself. Keep improving your skills.
As a producer, I'm a bit of an endangered animal because, you know, so very few people are used, because I don't operate the desk either. I just do the directing, and that's quite a privilege these days. I think the biggest worry for narrators is definitely the advent of the automatic voice, which is going to revolutionise audio production in the future. But I do think it would be very sad if we don't have anybody reading stories, you know, a human voice reading stories, because, you know, I say in the book that it's such a tradition for the human condition to listen to stories. We've done it through thousands of years, and I hope that we'll always want to have a voice, one of our own voices, reading to us a beautiful story to, you know, sit around the campfire at night. And also, you know, it's great sometimes when you've got somebody amazing, like, you know, a really famous reader, or not even famous, but just a fantastic narrator, sitting beside you on a long car journey. That's how you feel. They're there in the car with you, telling you a wonderful story. And I think that can't be better, certainly not with a robot.
Now, we've talked about the book a lot, Storyteller, How to Be an Audiobook Narrator. I take it it's available as an audiobook. Is it also available in print?
It's not available in print because it's very interactive, it's very hands-on, and there are exercises, there are demonstrations. So I think audio is its natural home and its natural format. You know, on our website, we have a list of the things we refer to in the book, so you can go and look at that, to the websites we refer to. But its natural home is audio.
Yeah. I mean, if we got a lot of requests saying, could we have it in an e-book format, there's no reason we couldn't do it. Mm. But you would miss out because of the demonstrations that Lorelei does are so good, and you have to hear them to appreciate it. But you could maybe work with the two in tandem if some people prefer to have a print version in front of them.
Yeah. As somebody who has to access their books only in audio, I think it's getting one back for the good guys,
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Have it only in audio. I think far more books should be produced just like that.
Well, it's a trend at the moment. There are books that are written only for audio that never have appeared in print.
Yeah. So how do listeners get hold of a copy?
Well, they're available from all digital download sellers like Audible, iTunes, Nook, Kobo, all of them. Again, you can go to our website, creativecontentdigital.com, and there'll be a list of the vendors. On YouTube, if you go to our Creative Content channel on YouTube, I've been uploading videos of me demonstrating some techniques in the book. Yesterday, I did one about having a cold because I'm fighting a cold, and I talked about recording that. Yeah, those are fun to do. So you can check those out.
Lorelei King, Ali Muirden, thank you so much for all the pleasure that you've given me and all the other people who prefer to access their books as audiobooks over the years. And long may you continue in your great work.
Oh, thank you,
Rhea. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The first person narrator character needs two voices in a way. That narrator will probably engage in dialogue with other characters, as well as speaking in what we could call an inner voice or a storyteller's voice. Therefore, your voice may, and probably should, subtly change for each of these. Let me show you what I mean. If I couldn't trust Lane, who could I trust? I took a deep breath. You know, when my mom and dad died? Lane immediately sobered. Did you hear the difference? The dialogue is more performed, a little more extrovert, whereas the narration is more intimate. These slight differences help to keep things clear for the listener so that they know whether you're speaking from an inner or outer perspective.
Storyteller, How to Be an Audiobook Narrator is on sale wherever you download your audiobooks. And if you'd like a full list of the dozens of talking books that Lorelei has narrated for the RNIB, just go to the library website, rniblibrary.com, or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999.